There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 65. I'm going to talk some year-to-date stats for rest of season projections for starting pitchers, recap some news, play our weekly game that now has a new leader back up top the leaderboard, and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're doing pretty good. We're busy. It's one of those days where I realized I put my shirt on inside out. And didn't realize it till about 2 o'clock this afternoon. And as you can see, haven't cared and it's still inside out. So it's, I don't know, just one of those don't give a damn days.
It's funny you mentioned that because I didn't do the shirt thing, but I put my pod in my Keurig and almost hit start before putting the cup underneath it.
And oh, nice.
That would have been a great start to the day. Just going to throw that out there. So yeah. Yeah. So
I've done the coffee in kids cereal before.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean caught myself before actually giving the cereal coffee to my kid, but
how did it taste?
Oh, I dumped it. Easy dump and move on and hope for more productiveness after that.
Yes, you can't. It's all uphill from there is the way I look at it. It's,
yeah, I mean that's as about as bad as it can start.
You want to know what's really bad though? Striking out and then kicking a water cooler with your foot. That's pretty bad. It's like hitting a water cooler when you're in the dugout as a pitcher with your pitching hand hitting the wall like Devin Williams did a year or two ago. And we're talking Jared Kelenic, if you guys live under a rock. Great start to the season. Massive slump going on. And the slump has obviously affected him between the years right now because he went after striking out on a Wednesday, kicked a cooler, fractured his foot. I've been searching Twitter all day. I haven't got a timeline for his return, but I'm assuming it's a while is what I'm going to say. Maybe for the rest of the season. We'll see. But they did call up Marlowe from the minor leagues. I'll get his full name for you. Chad Marlowe from the minor leagues.
Cade Marlowe.
255 average, 11 homers, 25 steals in AAA. So what are your thoughts on this situation besides Jared Kelenic? On my thoughts is, now I don't have to worry about stashing him or holding him thinking he might turn it around. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Inanimate objects remain undefeated against human limbs. I think that's the takeaway. It is wild. If we rewind back to May 1st, Jared Kelenic was hitting .310, 7 home runs, 4 steals. It was all happening. And then pretty much went back to Jared Kelenic ways. I think this was just like a culmination of all that stuff. And it sucks, but it's just, yeah. I mean, I, if you have Kelenic, you're moving on. But tough break.
Literally. I'm curious to see what goes on with Marlowe, Cade Marlowe, because they have enough outfielders there. But, you know, the power's a little – he sounds like a Zach Geloff profile almost with like a little less batting average. I don't know much about him because I'm not a prospect guy, but that's one to monitor. I don't know what the playing time situation will be. It is funny you mentioned the May 1st thing. That was about the time I went on the RotoWire podcast and talked about how I wrote about Jared Kelenic being a buy high target in the season. So there that shows you how fun being an analyst in fantasy baseball is, everybody. So there you go.
We hope to be right more than we're wrong, but it's just as good to admit when you're wrong. And I did that last week with Anthony Rizzo, first base, and then Rowdy Tellez as well this week. One thing, so going back to this Mariners thing, like I actually think Cade Marlowe will play against right-handed pitching. And you look at like this dude had, he had 42 steals last year, 23 home runs. So a 2040 season across Double A and Triple A. Even in Triple A this year in Tacoma, 10 home runs, 11 home runs, 25 steals. So like Cade Marlowe doesn't have, I mean, the HQ write up on Cade Marlowe from like the prospect and the scouting side is not very impressive. It's a 6A rating for HQ subscribers that follow that. But like lightning in a bottle, deep league, you need steals. If Seattle has a week where they face a bunch of right-handed pitching, maybe that works. It was pretty eye-popping to me, the power speed that he flashed in the minors.
Yeah, it was surprising to me because with stats like that, he never really was in many conversations that you see of like, hey, this guy's going to come up and make an impact this year.
Right.
And most of those kind of guys we've heard talked about, unless I completely missed the boat somewhere. But that's a pretty nice talent to have come out there, and we'll see. Obviously see how that one plays out.
Could see the ghost of Dylan Moore as well. Dylan Moore, that could be a platoon with Marlowe when the Mariners face left-handed pitching. I forget, what do you remember what year it was where Moore was like, I don't know how high his ADP was, but it was pretty high one year.
It was probably after his let's just say after his 2021 season when he had 12 homers and 21 steals.
It
was probably after 2020 when he had 8 homers, 12 steals in the shortened season with a .255 average. That's probably what it was. Because, yeah, his average was .181 in 2021. He hasn't been the same since 2020. So that would be it.
We all.
Yeah, platoon would make sense with Dylan Moore. New York Mets, they had some fun on Thursday. Starling Marte, he missed a couple games with migraines. They officially put him on the IL now with his migraine situations. I've had migraines before. They suck. I've never had them last this long. I have medicine that will take care of that, and we're good to go after like 24 hours. So his are pretty darn bad if that's the case. He's also been dealing with like groin issues throughout the entire season, even though he's stealing all the bases. Mark Vientos is supposed to get recalled to take his spot. At the same time, Tommy Pham, who's cooled down since we've talked about him a few weeks back, he left the game with a groin injury, and Buck Showalter said there's a good chance he's going to the IL as well. So the Mets are falling fast.
I think Pham gets some time to work on his Twitter game. He's on the IL.
Ooh, smack him.
see if he spends more time on there and goes electric. I actually wrote for HQ this week, like a trade deadline speculation piece. And one of those was like, there's a couple, Pham was one of them, but Mets outfielders, if they decide to sell, like who's going to step into that role? And I mean, that's kind of happening now with injuries. I'm really on Ronny Mauricio watch. Like there's not much outfield help in Queens available. Ronny Mauricio is a shortstop, but that's obviously taken. I think Mauricio gets a shot sooner than later, has very good prospect pedigree, has 14 homers, 14 steals with a 16% strikeout rate in AAA at Rochester this year. He's hitting .295. If I'm stashing and Ronny Mauricio is available, I would do that this weekend in the hopes that the Mets go down there and call him up sometime soon.
Yeah, they could put
Mauricio. I said, I messed up my second AAA city in a row. Last week it was Vegas and Reno. Caught myself this week. AAA Syracuse, not Rochester. Yes.
Syracuse. Rochester is the Mud Hens, I think. And that's definitely not them. Mauricio, they could put him at second base, put McNeil on the outfield to fill the outfield gap. So that could easily be a much more fluid situation because McNeil has played the outfield plays from time to time anyways, as we are. So that could be a real easy transition if that's what they want to do. So that's a good call. If that's a move that can come up, and it'll be interesting to see now because everyone's Fab's gone. If Mauricio would have come up like 2 months ago, he would have gone for a killing. So that'll be, this is why I always love this. Like, you know, Edward Julian, we all picked up, or whoever did pick him up, like $6-7 a couple of weeks ago after the first go around. And now he's crushing it and outperforming a lot of prospects. So you get these discounted guys now, and it gets much more interesting. Orioles. I just want to kind of broad spectrum this one for a second. Cedric Mullins goes to the IL with his situation, his groin injury, which never got better. And it just, it's a right abductor groin strain. That not just a groin strain, they had to be that specific about it. So he's on the IL. Who knows how long that's going to take? He's been getting hurt a lot to begin with. You got the Ryan O'Hearn, Ryan Mountcastle platoon, things people never would have had on their bingo card. That's for you, Zach Waxman. Colton Cowser now is playing pretty regularly, at least for his right-handed pitchers, with Mullins out. Jordan Westberg's sitting a lot. How are you looking at this Orioles situation? Because they don't care about our fantasy team. They're winning baseball games. So they could care less, but it's making it extremely frustrating for fantasy managers that were putting in investments on, especially like the prospects, the Mountcastle coming back from the IL, and so forth. It's getting interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hope it forces them to play Cowser every day. I mean, Cowser has at least played, Roster Resource has him as a platoon bat lefty, but has at least played and started against left-handed pitching. In the big league. So like, I think Cowser's the big winner here, and kind of, I mean, that when Cowser came up in Fab, that was my big like concern, was how much is he going to play? It's a really crowded outfield. And again, 9 times out of 10, this stuff works itself out with injury. So like, I think Colton Cowser's probably should get a shot every day and see what happens. I do wonder like how long this Aaron Hicks thing can last. I mean, obviously everything's going very well for the Orioles, who are now in first place, which is just crazy to think about given the way that the Rays started the season. I think Colton Cowser, and then just kind of like a lot of platoon-ish stuff. I wonder if Mountcastle gets everyday playing time, and maybe Santander plays a little bit more outfield than DH. Santander played first base on Thursday. Yeah. So like,
which is even crazier when you already have O'Hearn and Mountcastle, but doing, what's Santander doing there?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, I don't know, a lot of moving parts, but I do think Cowser, at least in the short term, will get some everyday playing time. At least I hope.
Let's hope so. He's walking almost 20% of the time. He has 3 hits on the season. So he's like, he's getting on base, just needs to work on the hit tool, which was very prevalent in the minors. It's there. So consistent playing time can help. He's only rostered in 69% of OCs right now. So 31% of leagues. Could go grab him this weekend and see what you get out of him. It's just very interesting to see, like, the Ryan O'Hearn Mountcastle thing blows my mind. It's hard to say drop Mountcastle, but like in a 12 team or less, if he's platooning with O'Hearn, is he worth holding on to, is the question.
Sorry, say that again. I got screwed up.
The Mountcastle O'Hearn thing, since they're platooning, like Mountcastle is, it's a legit platoon. Like in a 12 team league, 15s, you're holding him. Like 12 team or less, is Mountcastle even worth rostering right now?
No, I don't think so. Like, I don't think like in 12s, like playing time has to be there.
Yep.
Playing time has to be there. If playing time's not there, it's got to be somebody who, like,
because there's enough guys on the waiver wire that have playing time.
Exactly. So
yeah, that's the only reason I wanted to mention it. Because like, we've talked about Rowdy, we talked about how bad Anthony Rizzo is. Like, we talked about a bunch of guys. Mountcastle, everyone's like hoping. Like I saw people. Well, maybe he's still hurt, or maybe it's like, I don't think he's hurt. He's platooning. That's what's happening right now. So that like Ryan O'Hearn has more fantasy value at the moment than Ryan Mountcastle does. That is. Yep. Pretty freaking insane to see. So that's why I wanted to just do a quick little talk on this Orioles thing, because there's some moving parts there that I think people are holding on to that might want to reevaluate on Sunday. Oakland Athletics, Ryan Noda fractured his jaw, had oral surgery. It was a weird, weird injury. The reports on Thursday, the oral surgeon said he's going to be out for 3 weeks. So basically, you'll probably get him back to start September if you're holding on to him. I think he's a drop, unless you're like in an OBP league that can stash. But what's your thoughts on this Noda situation? And I guess against the A's, so do we really care? But there's probably people that do play in deep leagues that listen to this show. How would you approach this situation? Because this makes the Soderstrom thing so much more valuable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that we kind of talked about this last week when we talked about Soderstrom and Gilloff, was where does Soderstrom play? And it was like, well, maybe Oakland will trade Noda, and then this happened. I think he broke his jaw before the game and still played well.
Yeah,
that night
he got pulled late in the game. That's why, and then that's why I was looking it up because I missed all the stuff, and I do the first pitch every night, so I got to give like news. And all I see is leaves the game with broken jaw, and I'm like, he didn't get hit by a pitch. Like, what the heck happened? There was really no like clear cut news unless you like really got to the deep parts of Twitter. I couldn't find it that night. I was like, what happened? It was very strange.
Home run and a double in that game.
I would have just kept playing. Say, just you know, wire me shut. Let's go.
which would have defeated both of our weekend streamers combined for an entire weekend in one game.
Ryan very Nader. True.
Going back to this one, like I do think Tyler Soderstrom gets a longer look. I mean, what does Oakland have to lose? This opens up first base DH positioning for Soderstrom. And I don't know how well it will work out. Soderstrom's hitting 176 with a 20% swinging strike rate through his first 19 plate appearances. Like, it hasn't been great. And I don't even know if Soderstrom, even in like two catcher leagues, it's like if you're desperate. So, I mean, this is probably all about nothing. And actually, I saw in the HQ forum, Soderstrom in some formats is not catcher eligible.
No, he's I think he's first base only. He's first base only in NPC right now. He's catcher only in certain other formats. And so that, but he's going to gain first base real quickly if he doesn't have it. Let's put it that way. So you got that going for you. Yep. He's only 24% rostered in OCs right now. That was something that stood out to me doing the show with Ben earlier this week. Going, I thought he would have been picked up a lot more places. He wasn't. In 12s, he was not very popular, which is interesting. So there's that move. The other thing I wanted to mention with the A's, and we don't have to dig into this because I didn't put it on the outline, but I saw a report Mason Miller is going to throw 20 pitches on Saturday, all fastballs, as they start to work him back. So Mason Miller, if things keep progressing at a normal, like the normal progress after 20 pitches here and all that stuff, like a September-ish date, early September potentially type deal. So you might get a month of Mason Miller. Does that interest you at all?
Not really, to be honest. Like, and definitely not like right now. I don't think as a stash. Like maybe if it's late August, pick him up. But like Mason Miller will probably be gone by then. But like, I don't know. A, how long he would go into games in September? I think it would just be to get him some work, get him some reps, and then go. And then B, I mean, these were the concerns entering the season with Mason Miller. How many games is this team going to win in September? So no, I hope it ends well for Mason Miller. I'd be more interested to see what Mason Miller's ADP will be next season if he flashes health in September and looks pretty good. But in terms of like stashing for this year, I'm probably out on Mason Miller.
Fair enough. Last bit of like topic here, D-backs new closing situation. This one stands out to me. Like, it's been a revolving door. It's Chafe and it's Miguel Castro. Then McGuff looks really good for a while. McGuff's getting blown up everywhere now. And then Kevin Ginkle gets back-to-back saves. Looks really, really good. And Ginkle has been a closer in the past. Like, and he's gotten his chances. And the way that the D-backs have been doing things this year, it's like it feels like this is how McGuff got it back. Ginkle's going to get it for a little bit, and then he'll give it up somewhere along the line. My question to you is, if you're in need of saves, are you sticking with McGuff or are you going the Ginkle route?
No, you can't stick with McGuff, man. He's just been like, I mean, it's been really bad. I think you have to go Ginkle. And so even today, you know, on Thursday, Miguel Castro pitched the eighth, bottom of the eighth, gave up three runs, a walk, two hits, and 0.2 innings. So that's not working out well. I don't know. The closer role in Arizona, like there's been a lot of closers, but it's not because they're like shifting guys around. It's because they go to the closer role and immediately suck.
Blow up. Yep. Like they put them in there to get the job done. And then it's like,
right.
Yeah, you stink.
And like, if any of these guys could actually string together, like McGuff actually did for a little while, strung together a few decent outings. But I look at Ginkle and like, actually, I mean, there's something here. Mm-hmm. There's some swing and miss. There's a 56% ground ball rate. There's a 34-11 strikeout to walk, like not elite, but I think it's decent. And to go back to what I was just saying, like as long as someone has been in the role, Troy Lavoloa has stuck with that guy until they get blown up. So obviously that's not predictive of what Ginkle will do in the role. So yeah, I am interested in Kevin Ginkle in FAB this weekend, actually.
So I wanted to bring it up because I think it's an interesting topic of conversation. The other one, just while we're talking potential mess ups and bullpens, just for fun, AJ Puck has been a mess of late. It's the nicest way I can put it. And Tanner Scott's been very good. Any interest in specking on a guy like Tanner Scott this week?
Tanner Scott, who had a, I mean, he's been really good this year, 274 ERA, but last year, 161 whip.
Yeah.
His whip last year is almost his ERA this year. But that's life in bullpens. Tanner Scott, someone kind of interested. I've been stashing Carlos Hernandez in hopes of a Scott Barlow trade. And then in for the White Sox, what's I forget his first name.
White Sox, I got it. Santos. Right here. Yeah, Santos is has been actually very good. Gregory Santos.
Gregory Santos has been very good as well. I think that's probably the longest shot. If I had to rank like spec closers for this weekend in Fab, it'd be Ginkle pretty clearly number one because I think he is the guy right now. Then probably Scott, then Hernandez and Santos, something like that.
That's fair. Yep, it's that time of the year, spec season, since closers, like we talked about recently, they are keeping their job this year. It's a weird one.
No, it's I mean, that was one of our themes last week was just how like good relievers have been. I also think like this is the weekend to make those specs because trade deadline is August 1st and like, I mean, it's either going to happen or not by then and then we'll know and then you can move on if it doesn't happen.
100%. All right, let's talk game time, our weekly game time here. And like I mentioned earlier, there was a changing at the guard this past week.
Oh.
Domination is all I'm going to say, just pure domination in this matchup. It's kind of embarrassing again, but I'll let you have the floor to explain once again.
Well, it's easy to dominate when my guy didn't even play. And the guy who did play shouldn't would have been better if he didn't play. Yep. So I went Brian Anderson, who like, so it's funny. You mentioned this on Twitter, Bubba, like right before lineups on Friday, there was just this like massive dump.
Because you joked about it on the show last Thursday. So I was like, well, here it comes.
Yeah. And so I was actually out. I was out. I was not around from like 2 to 5 on Friday, which is that's a rookie mistake. I mean, you can't do that coming out of the break. Got back in at 5 and saw Anderson had been scratched. And I think the next day they put him on the IL. And now he's on the 60-day IL.
Yeah, it was a severe back injury, apparently.
I don't know what happened, but.
Yeah,
that so that didn't work that out. So nonetheless, needless, long story short, and so Colby Allard was my pitcher. He's also on not only on the IL, but also on 60-day IL.
You have so the touch, are, man.
Those are my two picks. So suffice to say, your Josh Donaldson, who's also on the 60-day IL. Yeah. Right
three
now.
Of our four guys went to the 60-day IL this week. Impressive.
Josh Donaldson's one walk last weekend takes the cake over my RIP Brian Anderson. And then you had Steven Matz with 4 points, respectable. I mean, at least like first showed up to work.
Yeah.
Four. So you took the lead, man. 13-12.
It's going to be a barn burner. It's going to be a barn burner coming down the stretch here. It's going to
if it's anything like last week, you know, high drama coming down the quarter pole.
On paper, I like my chances this week. We'll see. But before we get into our picks, let's talk about the weekly matchups using the HQ matchup tool. There's a handful of heavy hitting situations this week. So what are some of the best ones that stand out to you?
I mean, like, yeah, the first thing I always look at is Great American Small Park now, like almost even more than Coors.
Oh, I do 100%. For DFS, I target Great American all day long.
I mean, your boy Alex Cobb got... He didn't pitch well, but he also got destroyed today. So the Diamondbacks go to Cincinnati. I mean, I think with Cincinnati is like most of their guys are rightfully rostered. But if you've got any Arizona Diamondbacks that are available this weekend, and I actually picked Geraldo Perdomo as my streamer for this weekend for this reason, they get 3 at Great American Small Park against Blake Lively, of course. Yes. Brandon Williamson and Luke Weaver like that.
Yeah, that's murderous row, baby.
Yeah. So I am very much liking Geraldo Perdomo this weekend until I just saw your pick. So
I was shocked. I'm going to throw this out here real quick because Ryan picked the hitter first this week. It's his turn to pick hitter first. And so I'm scrolling through about a half hour before the show, and I see a 4% roster player, and I had the triple take going, okay, is he eligible? Yeah, no, he's eligible. Okay, this is cool, because we have like a little mutual agreement. If he's, you know, not in the pool beforehand, we leave him alone. So I don't know how this happened, but I have been using Christian Encarnacion Strand this week, and I'm pretty pumped on this. He is getting very comfortable at the plate now. He had another went 1-for-4 with another RBI and a run today. It doesn't matter for our game, but he's now hit safely in 3 straight games, with including a home run. He's playing very, very well, to say the least. And he gets to face an Arizona pitching staff of Tommy Henry, a lefty, which is what we like to see. Yeah. A potential lefty and Tyler Gilbert. Yeah, we'll stack on that all day long. And then last but not least, we get Blake. Is that Blake Jarvis? I think so. Am I right? Let me check. Bryce Jarvis. Sorry. This is how good these pitchers are.
I've never even heard of them. I don't even know their names.
That's how good these pitchers are right now. One of them is taking Zach Davies' spot, which I still would have been cool hitting against anyways. But yeah, I'm going CES on this one. Even if he only plays 2 out of 3 games, I'm very happy with this scenario.
So I think why Encarnacion Strand, he must have just been drafted in a couple of leagues, because he's not available.
I can make a different pick if it's not legal.
It's legal. We'll count it. You need all the help you can get, despite my clunker last week. So we'll keep it. Seriously, like the Reds lineup, what do you think of that? I kind of think it's going to work itself out. There's too many guys. There's one guy too many for the spots. It's like Spencer Steer sat day one. Encarnacion Strand himself sat day two. I think it's just going to be kind of like you play 6 out of 7 games.
100%. Like, they're going to get these guys out there a ton, but give them plenty of rest. Votto might get a couple days a week to rest. He'll DH, or he'll sit versus a lefty type thing. Sinzel is the guy that's gone. Like, he's pretty much just going to be in the weeds on this one.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, I guess it's fair. The guys you don't have to worry about, India, McLean, and Ellie De La Cruz, they're going to play every day. I think Fraley and Friedel pretty much play every day. It'll be the Steer, CES, Votto, that kind of situation is going to be the dudes here. And Will Benson, because he'll play versus righties, but maybe that's when Steer goes to the outfield there, and that's how you get CES at DH when the lefty's on the mound or something, because Benson won't play versus lefties. So, yeah.
Great problem. I mean, Will Benson, good Lord. He's a
beast. Beast mode. Yeah.
Eight steals, 6 homers since June, and not even a full-time role. And I think he had another steal on Thursday. So
yeah, and he went deep on Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, it's unreal what they're doing.
And they still have like 5 or 6 more top prospects that haven't been called up yet. Because this is why fans, this is a non-fantasy point real quick. When your team fire sales, and they do what the Reds did with like Castillo and company, Iglesias and all them, the hauls they got back, smart people are like, okay, this is good. This is really good. And now you're seeing it. That's why this is my 2 seconds to say it. Angels need to trade Shohei Ohtani. That's all I'm saying. You need to get like 4 prospects back for Shohei Ohtani, because you're not re-signing him. Put your pride away. Sorry, no one cares that's listening probably, but Shohei Ohtani needs to get traded for the betterment of the Angels team.
Yep, I agree. I mean, it makes total sense. The other thing on your fire sale comment, I agree. The Reds were very smart about what they did. So like the Reds did it right.
Yeah, not all teams do. I guess
there's the Oakland fire sale where you're basically giving away.
Well, they're trying to fire sale to leave the town. There's a difference.
Yeah, when you give Sean Murphy for Christian Pache,
that's
a little bit different. But in general, I totally agree with you.
The Angels did it very well. Like technically, the Mariners did when you got Kelenic and company, it looked like a good deal at the time. Like that's what you're looking for when you trade these big time studs. That's why. Like the Reds are gonna reap the benefits. The biggest thing for the Reds, and we've drug it through the sand. It's like Coors Field. Can you get the pitching? That's what it's gonna come down to, because your offense is gonna be legit for a while. All right. Speaking of pitching, who you got this week?
I went Johan Oviedo, who has actually pitched
much better
of late. Mm-hmm. Missing a lot of bats, 16 strikeouts over his last 2 games, faces the aforementioned Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, sans Mike Trout. So I like the matchup. 10 strikeouts last time against your San Francisco Giants, 6 at LA the time before that, with 17 and 18 whiffs in those 2 starts. So should look a little bit deeper in OVA to see if there's like a pitch mix change or anything there that's driving that. But someone who is at least pitching pretty deep in the games, gone 6 2/3 or greater in 3 of his last 4 with the K's. And so with our point system of innings plus strikeouts minus runs, I think it's a decent stop. And Oviedo was actually, I think, like just under 50% rostered in 12s, which seemed pretty high to me.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. Like, honestly. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I was looking in the wrong thing.
No, he's 40%. That's higher, about 20% higher than I would have expected.
It's also a testament to the starting pitcher pool. We say yes. That every week. But and actually, yes. I mean, I will say, I think it was Mike Curlin who gave a really good tweet this week. I've kind of said this before in the past, but like, if you're doing prep for 2024, just thinking about this, just tuck this away. Like, draft as much volume starting pitching as you can, because it is just, it's unbelievable the difference in talent every single week that's available to you streaming hitters versus pitchers. Like, it's not even, at least in 15s and in the formats that I play, it's not even close. Like, every week there's 3 or 4 hitters where I'm like, yeah, I could put those in. There's maybe one starting pitcher who I would put those in. And that one for me, and this is a segue, was Nick Pivetta, who I loved to scoop up last week and look great on Monday. So I'll give you the floor.
Yeah, my pick this week is Nick Pivetta. Again, I'm doing my prep and I see, I'm like, oh, there's no way he's eligible. Oh, 49% rostered in OCs, folks. 49% just made the cut this week. Wow. I'll guarantee you, no matter what he does on Sunday, that number will change next week. he will not be eligible probably for the rest of the year in this event. I'm just going to throw that out there. Nick Pivetta, we know how good he is. 13 Ks in 6 innings in his last time. Basically, since he started being the piggyback guy after an opener, he has been legit. He's gone 4 or more innings in the last 3. He's gone basically 70 or more pitches. He went 87 pitches his last time. So he's essentially a starter right now. If he's on the Tampa Bay Rays, just doesn't get the early part of they're basically avoiding the top of the order. It's an interesting strategy for him. Let him get loose before he gets that top. I know, like you've talked about, Jason Kelet has done this for years, like doing the time through the order studies on this. And Pivetta might have been one of those dudes, but watch, like, it was Oakland. The last 2 starts have been Oakland.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
Grain of salt here. But even against Toronto, 6 Ks, Miami and 3 3/3, 7 Ks. The reason I like Pivetta is he gets a ton of strikeouts. No matter how many innings he's going to go, a ton of Ks, just limit the damage. And that's what he's done so far. And he gets a pretty favorable match against the Mets that are without Marte, likely without Tommy Pham. Pete Alonso is hitting close to 200 now on the season since he came back from that wrist injury.
And it's could been, very well still be hurt.
Like, I can't remember who tweeted that out today, but they broke it down. Like, I think it was Brendan Tuma broke it down that he's supposed to be out for 3 to 4 weeks, came back after 10 days. And since then, like just in that time period, that would have been the 3 to 4 weeks. He's just abysmal at the plate. It's bad. And then he goes in the home run derby to top it off. So that was just like a what's going on. But to Pivetta's point, I'm just going to take my chances. He racks up Ks against the Mets, gives me 4 to 6 innings. It's just tough to tell with that situation. But I'm banking on another 6-7 Ks probably and just give up 1 or 2 runs, and I like my chances in that one.
Yeah, look nasty against the A's. And that was like the ultimate, the quintessential like bulk outing. I think the opener went 2 innings, and then Pivetta came in the 3rd with like a 3-0 lead against Oakland. It's like, yeah, this is going to work.
It's going to work beautifully. So we'll see how that one keeps panning out. And I guess I'll just for the listeners real quick for some fun here. If you are looking to pick Pivetta up this week, next week he's scheduled to potentially pitch against the Giants. So that's a good one. And then the Toronto the following week. So yeah, pick up Nick Pivetta. I'm just going to throw that out there. You're going to enjoy it for at least a few weeks.
Giants are playing okay.
They are. They won 7 straight till their last 2 losses. Like they're playing great, but they still strike out a lot. Like that's just, they have a lot of swing and miss out there, and it's going to be NSF to top it off. So yeah, you got that going for you. All right, Mr. Bloomboards, we got a fun one here that it's tough. Like we talk about it off air a lot. We kind of joke about it off and on the air. As the season goes on, it's tough to find relevant Bloomboards to like keep the fantasy stuff going. It's a good thing I have a co-host in Ryan Bloomfield. He's a really smart guy, so he finds these things out and pinpoints them pretty well. So today we're talking year-to-date versus rest of season projections for pitchers. So Ryan, the floor is yours. And again, if you're watching on YouTube, it's on the screen for you.
We did this a few weeks ago, pre-vacation and then pre-last week, all-star break, kind of mid-season recap. we did this for the hitters a couple weeks back, and doing it for the pitchers now, where we are looking at the year-to-date ERA, comparing that to Steamer and the bat projection system. Just kind of pick two that were on Fangraphs and average them together. Each system's very different. Rob Silver has made the very fine point that the bat seems to have adjusted a bit more to 2023's offensive run environment. So ERAs on the bat league-wide are higher than Steamer. I just took an average of the two and thought it'd be a good idea to just talk about the top 10 guys who are expected to improve the most from their year-to-date versus rest of season ERA, and then the guys who are the 10 who are projected to fade the most. And similar conversation with what we did with the hitters, but I think we had did like OPS, but ERA this week is, it's fun to just kind of look at these projections and say, which one do we kind of believe, the year-to-date, what we've seen so far, or these projections, which are a little bit more, I know we're deeper into the season, but a little bit more of like a baseline or three-year average of a lot of what these guys have done. So some interesting names for sure.
Definitely. And we'll kick it off with the man up top there, because he still just is the thorn in most of our fantasy sides, in Lance Lynn. And on the board here, you know, it's a 118 pitch, 6.06 ERA, projected for a 4.22. And he's one of those guys, you look at his indicators, a 3.84 xFIP right now. And the one thing that keeps keeping me holding out hope is, you know, a 27.7% K rate, almost a 20% K to walk, the things we love to see. So the skills are still very much there with Lance Lynn. It's just executing it for an entire game. So what are your thoughts on this Lance Lynn situation?
Not giving up, man. I mean, it'll be mid-September, and I'll still be saying this, and Lance Lynn will have a freaking 6+ ERA. But, I mean, Lance Lynn's getting even better, like, as the season goes on from a skills standpoint. His last four starts, 19% swinging strike rate. Like, that is, I mean, that's one of the best in baseball. I just think this is just one of those, like, historically, like, really just tough stretches. But beneath the surface, like, I have to believe Lance Lynn is going to come back. So, like, it's kind of crazy. June 18th, Lance Lynn, 32 whiffs.
Yeah.
At the Mariners. June 29th against the Angels, 24 whiffs. The next start against Toronto, 25 whiffs. Like, it's there for Lance Lynn. I would actually even go as far to say I'll bet the under on the rest of season projection of 4.22. I think it's going to be that good.
I'm with you. That's why I really haven't dropped them anywhere. I haven't started them religiously, but like we've talked about a lot of guys, I've dropped a lot of pitchers. It hasn't happened with Lance Lynn, especially when we talk about the player pools. No. With Lance Lynn, it's so, maybe it's the biases of the world, and I'm just going to sink with that ship. At least he's on my bench. I'm not like just throwing him out there willy nilly, but I'm 100% with you. When I look at his situation, I'm like, yeah, this seems like a thing. So I'm really, really still interested in that one.
I mean, the only thing of caution I would put, and this has no relevance to Lance Lynn himself, is he has been on my bench in the main for the last like month. Until this week. So Lance Lynn's in there, and
there's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by AT&T Fiber with AllFi. Something tells me that the guy watching sports for 13 hours straight on Sunday, who then stays up watching the recaps of those 13 hours, then calls his friends to talk about it, is definitely going to notice that half a second delay.
Get AT&T Fiber with AllFi and watch sports any time of day from anywhere in your house. Live like a Gagillionaire. Limited availability in select areas. Go to att.com/hypergig to check eligibility. Coverage may require extenders at additional charge.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Let's talk Jameson Taillon, because this is a guy that I've even written up in recent like fab articles, depending on the depth of your leagues. I know you've probably talked about him as well, because that's where we are in this season of pitching. But it's a guy that's really underperformed the expectations this year. There's no sugarcoating that. When you look at the Bloom board, it's, you know, 77 innings, 605 ERA, 483 projection. But like his 482 xFIP almost lines up with his projection, which seems pretty good. And like what I'm looking at here, his last two starts, he was outstanding against the Yankees, which now in hindsight, we'll see. And then his first start out of the break against the Nats, it's the Nats, but still effective. Strikeouts aren't there, but he's effective. So what are your thoughts on Jameson Taillon, who is definitely available in certain formats? Like in he's only 53% rostered, no C's right now.
Yeah, I'm very lukewarm. Like even these last two starts, Taillon just four strikeouts. Like you got to get strikeouts, especially this year, the way the environment's going. So, and even still, like Jameson Taillon, one of the best ERA improvers, and improving to a 4.83 ERA the rest of the season, like just isn't that palatable to me. So I don't think in 12s, I'm even thinking about Taillon, and 15s, like matchup only.
Yeah, I have not added him, I'll tell you that much. But it was something I was told people. I said, at least monitor him. See if he could build off that Yankee start. He kind of did, but like the strikeouts, I think if people have listened to me enough, I focus on strikeouts if I'm picking up pitchers. So Taillon's usually not on my list of things to do. Another pitcher that's been on my list of not things to do all year, and knock on wood, it's worked out so far, is Sandy Alcantara. 126 innings, 4.7 ERA, 3.8 projected the rest of the way. He's a 4.03 xFIP. The biggest reason I was off him this year, is to reiterate to people that may be new to the show, is I was hard and steadfast on he has to accumulate innings to be effective. That's just who he is. And any slip up would make him not meet the expectations. I think he's done way worse than what I was talking about. Let's put it that way. But are you a believer in this coming back? Because I've seen it tweeted out a lot of starts. He has one or two bad innings and the rest of it look like Sandy. But I'm sorry, like you say it when you do certain Bloom boards, when you take out a start and this would make the pitcher better for the year, we still have to take that start. So you still have to take the innings that Sandy pitched in that game. So I'm still like, yeah, I can't see it. I don't know.
I mean, it's a fascinating case. I mean, the projection of 380, like that actually feels about right. But that's so far off where Sandy Alcantara was entering the season. So, I think it's just a small win for folks who are still running Alcantara out there, and you are if you drafted him. I look at the skills though, man, and like compared to last year, it's kind of the same guy. Like, honestly, it's still a 50% ground ball rate. It's still a ton of innings. Velocity is the exact same. Fewer Ks, but Alcantara is actually missing more bats than last year. So like from an actual skill standpoint, but I mean, this was a debate with him entering the season, was like, he was not that good of a pitcher compared to his skills. This is very similar guy. So, I just think it's going to be fascinating what Alcantara turns out to be ADP wise entering next season. Do you think like fourth round, fifth round in 15 teamers?
They're in 15s. Yes. There will still be people that buy into him. They'll be like the Lucas Giolito conversation from last year. He'll kind of fit into that mold. Can you get back to that kind of pitcher, I guess, and take your chance? Lucas fell a little farther than I thought he deserved to be. I guess I'm biased on there too.
Yeah. He had the velocity drop.
Which, yeah. But like when you look at Sandy, I think one thing that was discussed in the off season, and it's actually come to fruition here. And I could be talking out of my rear end because I'm not looking at the exact stats, but when you mentioned the ground ball rate's the same, well, his BABIP's gone from 262 to 301, aka no shift, could have had a humongous influence on what happens, because now, you know, a couple singles in any and all it takes is a double to clear the bases or this, that, or the other. It just changes the whole spectrum of an outing, basically. And that's kind of when you're a heavy ground ball guy, you benefit from certain things. I might be oversimplifying it is what I'm going to say, but that stands out in a big way when you like a 40 point BABIP jump. That's a leap. That's a big leap.
Yep.
All right. This one is tilting my face off because I just can't wrap my head around Graham Ashcraft to save my life. you know, one of the darlings of spring training. Everyone drafts him, gets destroyed out the gate, goes to AAA, doesn't do much better there. But then he comes back, and it's been a tale of two grams is the way I'm going to look at it. He's been much more effective since returning on June 24th, 3.45 ERA, but a 5.06 xFIP, 16 Ks and 28 and two-thirds. If you look at your board here, it's a 5.77 ERA with a 4.94 projected. I don't buy this at all. I'm so still out on Graham Ashcraft, but he's getting it done. Literally, it's been two earned runs or less in four straight starts. Strikeouts have not been there still, but he's effectively throwing quality starts right now.
It's not going to last, man. There's no way it can.
That's why I have zero shares. I don't believe it. It's baffling to me.
I think if you still have Ashcraft, I think you thank him for your service, for his service, with those five earned runs over his last four starts, and I think you jump ship pretty quickly. Again, projected to improve to a 4.94 rest of season.
That's true.
Not good.
No, that's true. Not good at all. Let's do a fun one, like a positive one here. Somebody that's not getting shell. Like, we did a Lance Lynn for positivity's sake, but let's do Zach Wheeler. This one stands out, the fact he hits the board here. 111 innings pitched, a 4.04 ERA, which is the lowest on the board already. And then his projection is 3.45, which is definitely the lowest on this side of the board. He has a 3.49 xFIP on the season. Dude striking people out. He looks very, very, very good for the most part. Has his hiccups from time to time, but I'm a believer in this. I don't know about you.
Wheeler looks to me, and from the skills, like the exact same guy that we saw the last two seasons, 2021 and 2022. There's really not much. Better walk rate, same strikeout rate, more whiffs. Velocity's fine. It's pretty much just been bad luck on Zach Wheeler. I think Zach Wheeler the rest of the way, I would take the under on a 3.45 projected ERA. I think Zach Wheeler can be a top 10 starting pitcher from here on out. I really do. I mean, in those last two seasons where I said this is like a very similar guy, it's been a sub 3 ERA, a sub 1.05 whip. So like, if you're in a league that trades and you need starting pitching, like, give up a good amount for Zach Wheeler. Like, even if you're paying 90 cents on the dollar or whatever, Zach Wheeler, I think, could be or will be an impact starting pitcher the rest of the way. I think he looks fantastic. And for to have a 4.04 ERA with the underlying skills that look the way they do, I think it's a prime buying opportunity.
Yeah, it's. I dug into him a couple weeks back because one Michael Simeone was telling me and some others in a chat that he thinks Wheeler is going to have one of the best second halves amongst all starting pitchers for pretty much everything you just mentioned. Everything you just mentioned about all this, because I was like, I knew he's pitching well, but I was like, that well, really? So I kind of looked a little deeper and I'm like, wow, like, okay. I see what you're saying. So like everything you said, I'm like, yeah, it's very, very legit seeing what Wheeler's doing. And a big second half could be fun and make us forget that Aaron Nola tempts us every fifth day just to break our hearts.
I mean, yeah.
How's he not on this list somewhere? Is he because the projection's the same with your
Because the projection's probably the same sucks. Is my guess.
Yeah. Like, once I said it, I knew exactly why. I was like, yeah, never mind.
I could look him up. I do have the full list here. Because
he feels like one that always, if you look at the peripheral stats, he's like, he should be better than this. He really should. And then he never is because he has that one or two innings that just destroy you every time out there.
But. Which I will say, he's still getting like Ks, still getting some wins.
He was still 26th best people we talked last week.
We talked about it last week, and like he's a top 30 starting pitcher, which says more about the pitching pool than I think it does for Aaron Nola. But still, like, he hasn't been like horrendous. He's been like a lot better than a lot of other starting pitchers that were drafted early.
That's fair.
I think he gets crapped on a little bit too.
I think because we all expect so much more, and it's just like, I think Sandy Alcantara should get the same treatment that Aaron Nola gets. Let's put it that way. Like, come on, people, get it together.
Aaron Nola, rest of the way. Aaron Nola, just to close that loop, 4.27 ERA projected, 3.75.
So he just missed, probably. Just
the
rest missed
of the way. So he must have just missed.
Beautiful. So go get yourself a Wheeler Nola combo and see what happens. Anybody else on the green side of the board before we go the opposite direction?
Steven Dormats.
Yeah, I mean,
you picked him last week. I mean, he has moments. He's got starts
well again on Thursday.
Yeah. Yes, he did. That's right. I think at some point he was in danger of losing his rotation spot, but like the Cardinals, I mean, they're just going to play this out or trade him, but I don't know who's actually trading for Steven Matt. So I think that's a sneaky, like, mid rotation guy the rest of the way.
Yep. If he must have figured something out, because before he got like demoted to the pen and stuff, he was so bad. But since he's come back to that rotation when Wainwright got hurt, he looks like a different dude. It's very, very, it's baseball in a nutshell, but it's interesting to see how that one played out.
Yep.
All right, let's go to the opposite side of the spectrum here. And I'm going to kick us off with Kyle Bradish. This is a very popular name. You got Bradish, you got Wells, you got Dean Kramer. The young O's that are helping these dudes, that powerful offense, go to first place in the AL East. Bradish is the ace of the staff. Like, he's a dude right now. 91 innings pitched, 3.05 ERA, but he has a projected ERA of 4.31. On the season, he has a 3.81 xFIP, so they don't line up together, which stands out to me. Getting a ton of Ks of late. He's been in a different zone. Three earned runs or less in like his last 10 starts. Very, very effective stuff from Kyle Bradish. I'm having a hard time believing in this. I would go under on this projection.
I would too. So there's a couple of like layers to this, I think. And I believe it was Eric Cimulski.
Eric Cimulski mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah. And kind of listener questions on Twitter was like, do these projection systems, again, we're talking about Steamer and the bat, do they account for like in-season pitch mix changes, which in Bradish's case, he's throwing a slider. Over the last 3 months, he's throwing a slider more than any other pitch. Do these projection systems take those into account? I can't say for certain. I don't think so. Pretty sure Steamer does not. I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Cardi does with the bat, but I don't know. I'd have to double check, but my hunch is no, that we're not accounting for pitch mix, pitch shape changes in season. But I think they should. I think pitchers can change. I mean, I say this all the time. Pitchers can change a lot quicker than hitters can. So you do have that going for Kyle Bradish, who like over the last month has been great with the pitch mix change of using his slider more often. The thing is though, like I'm kind of with you, Bubba, like even though he has pitched great and even though the strikeouts are up, I mean, I use swinging strike all the time. Swing strike rate is at 11%. That's below average. And your general rule of thumb with whiffs and strikeouts is to just take swinging strike and multiply it by two. Bradish's case, you get like 22%. The strikeout rate over Bradish's last month is, I can pull it up, 29%, which is elite, but I just don't think it's backed up by, I don't think there's enough whiffs. I don't think there's enough non-slider pitches in Bradish's arsenal to keep this going. So I think a 4.31 ERA, I mean, that's kind of harsh from the projections. I think I'd go like a 4-ish ERA guy.
Yeah,
I'm the rest of the way, something like that.
I could live with that. That's why I'm kind of like, I don't think he's a 4.3 guy. I think he's still going to have a lot of really good starts. I'm still thinking there's some blowups that will come into play. It could happen this weekend when they face the Rays, for all we know, even though the Rays bats have been pretty ice cold. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think Bradish would still be very, very serviceable the rest of the way. Just don't expect that level of dominance the last 2 months of the season.
What's this Nate Eovaldi slander?
That's where I was going next. I just pulled him up on my Fangraphs page because I was like, got to give you the floor for your
what
boy.
What the hell
here
is this? Harbaugh.
123 innings pitched, 2.69 ERA, 4.05 projected. He's a 3.79 xFIP. He has slowed down a bit. He's had some velocity issues of late after that run of just pure, doesn't matter who he's facing, just dealt them all. So there's a step back there. He's kind of bounced back a little bit from that. But this is also a guy that doesn't pitch this many innings usually. There's a lot of concerns with Nate Eovaldi. So I'll let you have it here. This is one of the guys that made the Bloom boards run wild when they first started. So what's your thoughts on this Eovaldi situation?
No, I do. I've got to take my Eovaldi shades off. I'm actually take the over on 4.05 the rest of the way. I think Eovaldi will have a higher ERA. We saw what happened. So, I mean, all the points you just made, Bubba, are really good, like, especially with the innings in the second half. We saw what happened with Eovaldi late last season. It just, and even when he broke out in 21 or one of his breakouts, it was a little bit of a fade. late. And Evaldi, the velocity is very much down over the last month. It's down a full mile an hour. It's 16% K rate, 13% walk rate over Evaldi's last five starts over the last month. Like, things are not trending well at all for Nate Evaldi right now. So you combine the sudden like lack of control with a slower fastball, I just get really worried, man. So like, I mean, I'm still rolling Evaldi out there every week and main event, that sort of thing. But if I'm in a trading league, I would try and move Evaldi. As much as I hate to say it, I'm here to help the listeners as opposed to pump up my own ego with Evaldi. And I would, I'd try and move on here.
Yeah. I don't blame you. He's a guy that, yeah, I have not gotten rid of him yet, but I was literally, as you're talking, I'm sitting there going to 12. I could see him on waiver wires by September. Like, it wouldn't surprise me. It gets to a point where it's just like, there's other options that I need to stream type situation. And he could be that dude that got you to the dance. He's not going to get me home from the dance type situation. So
more walks than strikeouts in each of his last two starts. Velocity, which has been around 96 in his last two starts, 94 and 93.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good at all. So I was hoping they'd probably skip a start or two, like Mitch Keller, but then Mitch Keller came back and got destroyed.
Not exactly the blueprint to success.
No, that didn't work either. So we'll see how that goes. The Rangers need Eovaldi, obviously. I want to talk Bailey Ober. This is a guy that's been very, very effective this year. 88 innings pitched, 2.74 ERA, but the projections have him for a 4.38 ERA, and that's in line with his xFIP of 4.38 on the season. He's basically close to a K per inning guy. Like, when I watch Bailey Ober, and I love him because I have him in certain leagues, he's just boring. Gets you, like, he's like the American League Marcus Stroman to me. Like, he gets you six innings, quality start. Some days he gets you a lot of strikeouts. Some days he just plods through six. But a guy like that, as we saw with Stroman on Thursday night, that leaves a recipe for getting blown up at times too when he pitched to so much contact. So what do you have on Bailey Ober, which it was very interesting to see him actually show up on this because I'm not surprised, I guess.
I'm not either. And the reason why these projections are so bad for Ober is the fly ball rate. So like, fly ball rate is always a double-edged sword. And so he's kind of like, I agree, like from a result standpoint, it's similar to Stroman. From a batted ball, he's like the anti-Stroman. So many fly balls, 52% fly ball rate. Yeah. And like, you can live and die by the fly ball. Fly balls that don't leave the park are almost always outs. But I in research has shown this, like a pitcher's homer to fly ball rate, they don't really have that much control over it. Tends to go back to like league average, which this year I think is around like 11%. He's
allowed,
like that.
He's only allowed 9 home runs this season, and like the bouncy ball we live with. Good gracious.
I mean, that's what I'm getting at. It's like so many fly balls, and he's just, Ober has a 7% homer to fly ball rate. Like, I think there's a couple real bad outings coming up. A 4.30, what is it? 4.38 ERA. Yeah. That's pretty damn harsh.
Yeah.
But
maybe close to 4.
Can't argue it.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't get all the way to 4.38, but close to 4. Wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't shock me at all. So
the thing say about Ober too, though, and I made this point the other way around with Bradish, where the whiffs weren't there and the strikeouts were. With Ober, like, the strikeouts haven't been there, never been there, really, throughout his career. The whiffs are really good, 14% swing strike rate. So, like, there's some, I think, upside in the strikeout potential. But, yeah, those fly balls, man, once those, a few of those start clearing a fence, I don't know.
Yeah, it'll probably get ugly eventually. Because usually, the funny thing is, Minnesota, people think pitchers park, and it is and it isn't, though. Like, there's certain parts of that ballpark where that ball will fly out of that park. So the fact he's been able to even do it at home is still impressive. So we'll see how long that one goes for. I want to mention Josiah Gray again. We talked about him a few times throughout the season on different boards. 105 innings pitched, 3.59 ERA, 5.15 projected ERA. His xFIP's 4.82. This has been like a tale of two seasons. He was great early on, then kind of looked mediocre for a bit, kind of bounced back. He's been mediocre again of late. So, I have no faith in Josiah Gray. I guess it's almost impressive he's made it this long to me. So, what are your thoughts on this projection of 5.15?
I mean, it's really brutal. Josiah Gray is like the ultimate tinkerer. He just keeps switching his pitch mix, and nothing really seems to work. Throwing the slider a lot more. He's pretty much ditched his curveball. as the season has gone on, he's throwing it like 10% of the time, 7% of the time over the last month. But it's just, I don't know. It's never really like, it's like no matter what he tries, it's still just, I don't know, a lot of walks and home runs. And I think of an ERA north of 5 the rest of the way, despite a 3.59 ERA right now for Josiah Gray. I think that's, I don't think he's that good.
The rest of this list is interesting. I'll let you have the floor here because I don't want to hear any E-Rod slander on my show. But I get it. I get it. I'll let you have it. Eduardo Rodriguez, explain to me why his 2.69 ERA, 3.98 projected. The thing is, I guess 3.98 to me is kind of E-Rod anyways. So I'm not like, I don't feel this is a, this feels hurtful just to have it on this board.
Yeah, like.
He's not a 2.7 guy. I understand that. No. I 100% will embrace that. But like a 3.5, 3.7 guy, he can be that.
Yeah, I mean, that's HQ's got him, like, expected ERA this year, 3.50, and projected end of season, 3.50. HQ, the let's see, rest of season, 3.63 for E-Rod. So HQ's a lot more
in my world,
bullish than Steamer and the bat. I don't know. I'm still scarred from last year, man. I mean, he's your boy this year, but last year just disappeared on us.
He's been my boy every year. I dropped him everywhere last year, but I went right back to the ADP price tag this year. And then I picked him up as a spec. And after that first start, the golden rule, usually don't start guys on their first start off the IL. His last two starts, he's been great.
Really? Yeah, it really is. I mean,
no walks in his last start, which is all I care about with him.
And two of his last three. So three starts in July, 7 Ks in each of them. No walks, yep. 2 walks, no walks. It was Oakland at Seattle at Kansas City. There is that.
Yes, there is that minor detail.
But I don't know. The strikeouts are way up for E-Rod, which is always a great sign. The walks are way down career best, 5% walk rate. So there's some tangible changes here where, like, yeah, I think, like, I don't know, I think 3.50 the rest of the way for E-Rod sounds about right to me.
Yeah, and coming up, he gets two starts next week, Giants and Marlins. I can enjoy that.
Pretty good.
See where we go from there. But it's Tampa Bay the following week. So kind of maybe sit him on that one. We'll see where that one plays out. Anybody else on the negative side of the board? Because there's interesting. Like Stroman got beat up on Thursday. Tommy Henry. Freeland's going to be out for a while. Then the bottom two are kind of like, yeah. So, yeah. What do you like here?
Yeah, I mean, the bottom two, they're interesting because sub-3 ERA guys, Dane Dunning and Michael Wacha, but, like, especially Wacha, man. Like, yeah, how the hell did that happen?
He did this last year, too. I mean, like, it's just crazy.
I know. We can keep saying, oh, you know, he's going to fall back. He's going to fall back. Eventually, he will. Like,
Waka's doing the Wayne right now.
Yeah.
Well, he gets a certain age, and he's just going to do this for like 4 years, and then he's going to turn into the Wayne that turns into a pumpkin.
Dane Dunning, not very good either. I mean, a great story, a great run, that sort of thing. But both of these guys going from sub-3 ERAs to mid-4s or higher, I think is the proper call.
Yeah, Dunning especially. Like Wacha, like I hated Wacha. I talk about him on DFS, but he doesn't strike guys out too much contact. Well, he kind of started striking guys out a little bit more than I expected, so I'll give him that much. It wasn't great, but he did. Dunning doesn't strike anybody out. Like he just pitches the contact, and that is a disaster coming his direction. So he's very fortunate that they don't play in the old ballpark at Arlington. Let's put it that way, where the ball would just be, it would just be like batting practice out there for Dane Dunning. So he's got that working in his favor, that ballpark. But I saw those names on the list. Like, yeah, those ones check out. Those make a lot of sense.
And Waka's shoulder injuries. So how old do you think Wacha is without looking?
I know it's younger than we would think.
Okay. younger than I thought.
I was going to say like 34.
I was going to say like 35, 36. Dude, I mean, he's 32. It's not that old.
Oh, wow. Like at first, I guarantee if you took those little fancy little microphones around to people that they do interviews with now, you would have probably got like 38 and over from a lot of people. Because he legit feels like Adam Wainwright's like little brother. Like because they were at the Cardinals forever. Just the maturation and progression of Walker's career, to me at least, it feels like Wainwright. But 32 is still very young, actually. So that's interesting. But Dunning, yeah, it's a weird list. Freeland, he's going to be out for, and back to Wacha, he's still not even throwing yet.
Right. Yeah, so. I mean, we probably should have mentioned that at the top, shoulder. So, yeah, I think same with Freeland, the both shoulder guys.
Yeah, and Freeland's was a freak one. He did it trying to field a bunt, so that was nasty. It's a very interesting board on both sides.
That's the strategy to avoid regression. Just get hurt.
Yeah. Then you get to, he gets to go to sleep at the end of the season. Walker could not pitch again and have a sub three ERA for 2023. And
don't know what his contract status is, but that could work out for him. And
could be a bonus. Yeah. Could be a big bonus. We'll see. So yeah. Yeah. For the rest of his life, he could look at fangraphs.com and see that number is legit. All right. Let's take some listener questions here before we head on out on this week's episode. We'll start with Gaman 8. He says, can you rank these guys for Roto 5x5 rest of season? Kerry Carpenter, Chaz McCormick, Eddie Rosario, and Seiya Suzuki.
I think I go Suzuki, who I think is like 2-for-7 on the base pass, but like
he's been just rough all year. That preseason injury thing seems like it's lingering right now.
And maybe I'm too high on him, but I've always liked Suzuki. I still go with Suzuki. I think I'd go Eddie Rosario. The only issue with Eddie is just, I mean, I made this point last week, and that Atlanta like never faces left-handed pitching. I think they get all righties again this week. But at some point they will start facing left-handed pitching, and Eddie Rosario will not play. Similar kind of thing with Kerry Carpenter, who is playing every day, but like everyone's healthy in Detroit. So like, I think once this heater that he's kind of been on, he's already starting to tail a little bit. I think that playing time leash is pretty low. Chaz McCormick.
He's been very, very good.
He has. Very
good.
He has. I'd probably put him second behind Suzuki, to be honest. The only thing is like
the PT.
Well, yeah. How long does he get? And really, Houston in general, once Yordan comes back.
Yordan's coming back on Monday, unless he has another setback. They've already said Monday's the day. So we are about to find out. People are going to set their rosters on Monday with Corey Jolks and Chaz McCormick and maybe a few others, and someone's not going to be happy. Let's just put it that way. Great. We don't know who it's going to be yet. Someone's not going to be happy.
So that's what and Suzuki's going to play. I think from a playing time standpoint, out of all these guys, and over a two-month stint, like – I think we're getting to the point where you need guys who can play because it's just so hard to project how people are going to do over a month, 2 months. Get the guys who play, worry about it later. So, yeah, I'd go Suzuki, McCormick / Rosario, and then fellow Virginia Tech grad, Kerry Carpenter last. Sorry,
there
you
go. I'm going to go with Eddie Rosario. Because even like next week, they place 5 righties out of 6.
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, I pull that. And then the following week, it's amazing. Like you said, it's the first 3 games. It's 2 righties and a lefty, Patrick Sandoval. They don't have the Cubs series yet, so that could be a Smiley steals. Maybe that's the first week where it gets interesting. We'll have to see. But I'll go Rosario. I'm still going to go Chaz McCormick. I think out of all the outfielders, Jolks is the odd man out because McCormick plays center field and can do a little bit of everything. I'm gonna say Suzuki third, and talent wise, Seiya should be first, but just what I'm seeing right now, I'm gonna say a third. I'll go Kerry Carpenter fourth. That's kind of how I'd break it down. A lot of similarities in these guys. That's why these questions always, like, I get these questions a lot in Discord. I'm just like, play the matchups for the week. That's pretty much what I could tell you because these are all very similar ball players, very similar, and makes it tricky. All right, Boom Zoom asks, not a typical question, but here it goes. Any tips for jump-starting interest in fantasy? He said FFB. Is that fantasy baseball, football? I don't know. Mid-season. I just returned from a family emergency the last couple of weeks, and now setting lineups and making roster moves just doesn't seem that important. Well, if it's not important, don't worry about it, is what I would say, personally.
Yeah, I mean, and family emergency, like, I hope that's so much more important. And if this is if fantasy baseball is an added stress on stuff going on outside of that,
don't worry about it. Yeah.
Coming from two people who do this like way too much, it's not worth it. But if things are good, you want to get back into it, I agree. Like if you have stepped away for a couple weeks and your team's kind of in the gutter, like what's the point of doing it? I would, I don't know. I don't want to promote gambling or DFS, but that's one way to get back into it. I kind of do want to promote DFS. I just can't play it in Oregon. That's a whole separate podcast. I can gamble, but I can't play DFS. So don't know how that works. You could do something like that. Unfortunately, Underdog just finished out their 7th inning stretch, like the rest of the season best ball.
They do daily best ball games though that are fun, and they do the pick'ems. So similar to the gambling thing, like over unders on props, basically. So
yep. I mean, that's something I would do to. There's really not many leagues available after the All Star break. Like it kind of the industry kind of, I don't want to say shuts down, but
they shift to fantasy.
The king football. Comes back.
Yeah they shift. The what I would say outside of Ryan's points of getting the juices flowing, which I completely agree with. That's why I pretty much play DFS to continually have something going on to keep me focused on this is I would say do it for pride. It's actually funny because Ryan and I were talking about it before the show, like certain leagues are in, like we're trying to just make jumps to like going from like seventh to third in leagues and stuff. I know not everybody cares. Everybody cares about their money and I get it. That's what we play a lot of these for, but I like to just see how, can I make a point to get from A to B, be better by the end? I think, because by doing so, as cheesy as this might sound, it'll make you a better player for next year because you're seeing how you're grinding it out this year, how you're looking at stats, how you're doing this, that, and the other. And now you can take that into the next season, and maybe you're having a great season and you need to hold on for a win. Well, now you know how to get those stats and make that stuff work. So I would say take it that way. Use it as a learning tool. Have fun. Just have fun with it. Don't treat it as like I'm screwed as a chore. Have fun with it. Go like, hey, can I improve in home runs and runs scored for whatever for the rest of the season? Just like target a couple things and have fun with it. See what you can do. That would be my two cents.
If you've got buddies in a league, maybe do a side bet on that. Say, hey, rest of year, who gets more home runs? Just something simple, like who hits the most, you know, like who hits more home runs?
Yeah, they all know you had stuff going on. Like, hey, let's have some fun with this. Let's go.
Yeah.
So that'd be the two cents. Yep. So see what you can do in that regard. All right. Yeah, here's Eric Samolsky comment. Curious if these Bradish stats take into account the pitch mix change. He's been leaning way more on the slider the last 6 weeks. So, yeah, we don't think they do, but good point, Mr. Samolsky, who is now writing for NBC Sports Edge. Let's go check him out over there. Thunder Dan, my buddy that I used to work with at Rotoballer, said, I'm not really buying a Sandy bounce back, and I think Bradish might be the truth. We agree with you on Sandy. Kind of agree with you on Bradish, but not fully.
No, we think we disagree. At least I do on Bradish. I'm not believing what I see the last month.
Our buddy Ben Tidd, Julio Urias was on the negative side of the board earlier tonight. I just didn't bring him up because to me he's missed so much time. Like that number's kind of fluffy to me right now. He says, where do you guys think Julio Urias falls in next year's draft? Also, I'm pretty sure his rest of season ERA is what his projected ERA going into each season usually is, LOL, which is actually kind of true. Where do you think he goes in drafts next year? Because he's a guy that I rarely ever draft. I haven't been in one league this year because to me, he always goes higher than I think he should go. But we talked about it. Eventually, you just got to say, screw it. He's not going to get the innings, but he's going to get your strikeouts and wins. And this is who he is. And that's still very fantasy viable. So
now, yep. And I did pick Urias in one league in TGFBI. I've never had him before. But, like, I thought this is just process-wise, like, the wins were Julio Urias, I forget the exact number, but had, like, so many more wins than any starting pitcher in baseball over the last two seasons entering 2023. It was ridiculous. So I don't – honestly, I think the market will still factor in LA, factor in the wins, and Urias is maybe, like, a – top 60 overall pick, something like that. To Ben's comment, it's funny. I actually have the original tweet up here. Julio Urias projection entering the season, 404. And right now it's 414. So he's right. The projection has not moved at all. And it's funny. A lot of people bagged that preseason projection for Julio Urias. It seemed crazy. There's no way Julio Urias could post a 4+ ERA. Here we are.
To your wins comment, like he had 20 in 2021, 17 in 2022. He had the 20 and 32 starts. He had the 17 and 31 starts. He still has 7 wins and 14 starts. He's winning half his games. Like if he didn't, I know it's big if it happened. If he doesn't get hurt, he's on track for another 15, 16 wins again. He's doing exactly what you wanted from him, and he just has the higher ERA than we'd hope for right now is pretty much what it comes down to. So this is who he is, I think, and you're getting it. He's better than the numbers right now. I'm not going to deny that. He's on a 5 ERA guy. But for the wins, what you're going for, that's who this dude is. It's pretty crazy to see that kind of consistency. Mike John Ray says, are you encouraged by the Grayson Rodriguez start? Can he be valuable down the stretch? What are your thoughts here? Because I have some weird biases on Grayson, but what do you got?
I mean, he was pumping gas. I actually watched the first couple innings of that before the kids come home, my peaceful two-inning East Coast game window, throwing 100. I don't know. It's the walks. It's the walks. It's always been the walks and pitching deep in the game. So, no, I don't think Grayson's out of the woods. Would it surprise me if he suddenly turns this thing on and becomes the pitcher we all thought he'd be, or at least some of us thought he would be entering the season? That's possible. But I didn't see enough from that one start, and I still think you can't take enough away from one start to believe this is a turnaround. So, no, I'm off of Grayson the rest of this season, at least.
I still am as well. I didn't buy back into it just yet. I didn't get to watch it all. I was paying very close attention on my phone watching the game cast where I had my daughter running around the house because I was just curious to see how it would go. And it's the Dodgers, so I'll give them that for one. Okay, Dodgers, I get it. Tricky. And he was dominant early on, like you mentioned. Second time through the order, a little different. Third time through the order is when it blew up. So and he only had 4 Ks overall, even though he was pumping gas. Like, I know the Dodgers are good, but you think if you're pumping that kind of gas, it shouldn't matter who you're facing. Really, you should be able to at least get a K per inning. He gets the Rays this weekend, and he gets the Yankees next week, who strike out against everybody. So you'll have a very good barometer. And I think it's next Thursday when he faces the Yankees. So when we talk next Thursday night, we'll have a really good feeling on who Grayson Rodriguez is by that point in time. But as we speak now, I'm with Ryan on this one. I can't get to it yet because what concerned me the most was the second and third time through that order. They were catching on to what he was doing. Let's put it that way. And that's not good for a young pitcher, especially if he's going to have control issues. So not good.
Yep. Five innings, 91 pitches in that last start. That's par for the course.
Yep. Then last but not least, Skeens Truther says still brutal for Julio. I'm just talking about Julio Urias. So yeah, it's a rough one to say the least. All right, my friend. Another episode in the books. Any final thoughts as we have one more July episode and then it's the 2 months stretch? So basically we have about 9 weeks to go before it's all said and done. It's way closer than it sounds like. And FPAS, if you need hotels for FPAS, the block is available. So go get her done. Sorry.
Block is open. And confirmed news that at FPAS, we knew that the weekend would intersect with the Home Run Derby and Fall Stars game.
Couldn't have asked for a better schedule, though.
Yeah. Like across the street, both of those. Yeah. Like that is money. So
literally walk from your bar stool to the ballpark, back to the bar stool. Back to the bar stool. Very simple.
Yep. What we did last year.
Friday night, you might get to go bar stool, ballpark, podcast room. Just throwing it out there. That could be fun.
With sidebar next to the podcast room.
Yes. So. Yes. Sidebar. You can bring drinks into the podcast room because we do. Unofficially sponsored by High Noon. So it's there. But what Ryan was saying before I cut him off, Home Run Derby's Friday night. Fall Star Games is Saturday night. Last year, the Derby was on Saturday. The Fall Stars on Sunday, so most of us missed Fall Stars. But you get the whole thing there, which is going to be pretty darn amazing. They're still ironing out some other final details like the welcome reception and everything else, but it's a cool schedule. That's why I didn't bring it up. I should have brought it up at the top. It's a weekend we all love. So if you want to play golf, keep them coming. It's going to be a fun one. But now that I cut you off again, any final thoughts on the episode?
No, that's all good. Speaking of the golf, I'm probably going to just go straight into round two of the British Open tonight. Starts in about 20 minutes. So
I'm debating, do I buy Peacock tonight? Because I got about 3 more hours ahead of me here. This might be I might get my money's worth tonight. They got to have a free trial or something, right?
I think you can get it for a month and then bail on it. Yeah, so.
Perfect timing.
About to start up over in across the pond. So,
it's going to be awesome. Can't wait to watch that and watch some more baseball. We got a full day on Friday, big weekend ahead. Hopefully, we can avoid hopefully, we don't see Homer and Derby like we saw a couple nights ago. Like, that's fun and all, but holy shnikes, that was pure carnage. But until next
you
week,
mean like injury wise?
No, it was like the other night when there was 11 teams scored double digit runs for the first time since eight. Like, every pitcher besides like Jordan Montgomery and some guy you would never would have guessed pitched great. It was wild, wild stuff. But you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm on Twitter at BDintric. Until next time, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 65. Catch y'all later.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote? Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.